Chapter 18. Private First Class Clyde Cooper stood at the last train station he'd need to transfer into before arriving back in Seattle. He'd sent a letter and a telegram to Abby telling her when he'd be arriving. She'd responded to the telegram soon after. He looked at it as though she'd written it herself. Although short and to the point, he couldn't stop pulling it out of his pocket and reading it. "We'll see you soon. Love you." He played with his wedding ring, twisting it endlessly on his calloused finger. He glimpsed his reflection in a window. He barely recognized himself. He wore his garrison cap at an angle, and the parachute emblem with the blue backdrop lined up perfectly above his left eye. He had filled out, replacing baby fat with hard muscle. He knew he looked good in the uniform. Would she recognize him? He couldn't wait to see the look on her beautiful face when she saw him with his shirt off. But not as much as he yearned to see and feel her warm, sexy body beneath his own. He hadn't managed to get her pregnant before he left, but he hoped to accomplish that mission before he had to ship out again. 20 days alone with his wife. The thought made him giddy. The last leg to Seattle seemed to take forever. He slept part of the way, but he couldn't keep his mind off Abby. He read whatever newspaper he could get his hands on, paying close attention to any news from the Philippines. He rejoiced when he read about the bombing of Tokyo. He wondered if he would have the courage to attempt such a thing. Although the paper didn't say it, it sounded like a suicide mission to him. But at least the Japanese got a little taste of what they'd given them at Pearl Harbor. Most of the news wasn't good. Besides the raid, the Allies seemed to be getting their butts kicked at every juncture, both in Europe and the Pacific. Looking out the window, he knew they were getting close. The endless wheat fields of the Palouse had given way to towering mountains, some of which they'd bored through in a series of long tunnels, and others they wound through deep canyons beside rushing rivers. Now forests surrounded the train on both sides and took on a soaking wetness. He marveled at how different it looked and felt compared to Georgia and Alabama. The train finally stopped at his station. He lurched from his seat with his duffel bag ready. A few other soldiers stood and joined the queue, but the manifest mostly comprised civilians. He burst from the train and scanned both ways. He didn't see Abby anywhere. He walked toward the main exit, searching for her. He finally saw her burst out of the bathroom, furiously wiping her hands on a cloth towel and looking around desperately. He stopped mid-stride and dropped his bags. He couldn't take his eyes off her. She looked more beautiful than even his wild imagination remembered. She spotted him and froze for an instant. The people hustling between them seemed to disappear. She ran at him with outstretched arms. They collided and embraced. The smell of her hair, her breathing, her heart pounding against his chest filled him with joy. "Abby, my love," he murmured into her thick, dark hair. She pushed away and looked him up and down. "My, oh my, but you look good in that uniform," she beamed. He couldn't contain his smile. He could see the love and deep wanting in her suddenly sultry eyes, and he wanted her just as much. She lunged into his arms again, and they kissed passionately as passersby surged all around them. When they finally came up for air, only a few people remained, some glancing at the amorous display. Neither of them cared one whit. "I can't believe I wasn't right there when the train arrived. I took a cab, traffic was awful, and by the time I found the right gate, I had to pee so bad." She whispered the last part, and he laughed uproariously. He'd missed her so much. "I know it's crude. I'm sorry, my dear," she said sheepishly. He drew her in tight as they walked. "That's what I love about you, Abby. You're unlike any woman I've ever met." He kissed the top of her head and sighed. "My God, you smell good." She looked up at his blue eyes and squeezed him. "You're all full of muscles. I can feel them through your uniform. I want to hear everything. Don't leave out a single detail." "You've changed too, I think. What have you been up to all this time?" "You first," she said. Abby unlocked the apartment door. She and Clyde quickly entered, and he took her in his powerful arms and kissed her passionately. Her head spun with love and want, but she couldn't quite get the image of the two thugs being ripped apart out of her mind. Clyde stopped kissing her and looked into her eyes. "Is something wrong?" he panted. She shook her head. "No, my darling. Everything is just right." She took his hands and led him through the tiny apartment to their bedroom. She saw the love mixed with pure lust in his eyes, and she felt the heat of his gaze rush through her like an ocean wave against a sandcastle. She pushed the awful images of violence to the back of her mind, and they made hurried, then passionate love until they both lay panting in the afterglow of ecstasy. She leaned against his chest and lit a cigarette. He raised an eyebrow at her. "You smoke now?"
"Not really. A friend gave them to me, and after what we just did, it just seems natural." "I'm surprised you don't smoke. I thought all soldiers smoked."
"Most do. I find it cuts my wind, though." She giggled.
"Well, you don't seem to lack stamina."
She traced her fingers across his muscular chest.
"Your body's so different," she mused.
"You like it?"
"Oh, yes, of course. It's the same body I remember, but now it's so much more. So powerful."
"You want something to eat?" he asked. She looked surprised.
"What? They taught you how to cook, too?"
He sat up, and she couldn't take her eyes off his broad back. "I'm not completely useless in the kitchen," he countered.
"Promise me one thing."
He looked back at her, and she blew smoke out the side of her mouth.
"You have to cook with your shirt off."
He laughed, and she realized how much she'd missed that laugh. She watched him stand and slip his pants on. His back rippled with new muscles. He didn't put his shirt on as he left the bedroom and went to the kitchen. She stubbed out the cigarette and followed him, still not able to take her eyes off him. She wanted to acquaint herself with those new muscles all over again. "I'll just cook us some eggs and toast," he said. She leaned against the wall in nothing but her underclothes.
"It's lunchtime, but that sounds perfect."
As he opened the fridge, guilt overcame her.
"I can do it, darling. Why don't you relax on the couch?"
He lit the stovetop and placed a beat-up pan on top.
"How about we do it together?"
She wiggled her way in front of him and relished his smell and touch as he reached around her. She nuzzled into his neck and felt a rush of desire. She could feel his desire growing, too, and she said,
"We'll never get anything done this way."
He laughed and said, "You're probably right. I'll sit down." He kissed her neck and went to the chair where he could still see her. She cracked two eggs and put two slices of bread in the oven to toast. He asked,
"So, what have you been up to while I've been gone? It
sounds like you're making new friends, at least." She looked alarmed. Did he know? She hadn't decided how she intended to handle the topic of the gambling hall and the violence. It had only happened days before, and she'd barely processed it herself. Could she keep it from him? It felt wrong to keep anything from him. But he would leave soon, and all it would do was cause him to worry about her. She'd heard nothing about any repercussions. Trish hadn't come by, and she didn't know if that had anything to do with Sal's interference. She'd seen him a few times. Sometimes he'd park in front of the apartment for hours. He never attempted to talk with her. He just watched over things. And despite her initial anger at being treated like a child, she was glad for his protection.
"What do you mean?"
she asked, trying to keep the fear out of her voice. "The cigarettes. You said a friend gave them to you." She turned back to the eggs so he wouldn't see the relief on her face.
"Oh, yes. Trish gave them to me."
She bit her lower lip, wishing she hadn't told the truth. "Trish. Do I know her?"
"No. I met her after you left."
She shrugged.
"She's just a woman I met at the grocery store."
"Ah. How's old Charlie doing? He still run the store, or did they draft him, too?" She realized she didn't know anything about Charlie's condition. He'd still been unconscious when Sal dragged her out of there. For that matter, she didn't know about Vince's condition either. She couldn't keep the tremor from her voice as she answered.
"Yes. He's still there. I didn't know you knew him. She felt Clyde come out of the chair and approach her. She shut her eyes, trying to pull herself together, but she felt ready to explode. He touched her shoulder and she jumped. He soothed her. Hey there. Easy does it. She turned toward him and she couldn't keep him from seeing the tears forming in the corners of her eyes. Concern caked his words. Abby, tell me what's wrong. What's going on? I can tell something's a little off with you. He hesitated, and she saw a glimmer of fear, then anger in his eyes, but it faded quickly. Is there someone else? Oh my God, no! She shook her head emphatically. No, Clyde, it's nothing like that. I would never do that. You know that, don't you? He didn't answer, but asked, What then? What's going on? You can tell me anything. I'm your husband. She hugged him tightly and cried into his chest. And I thank God for that every day. The eggs started to burn, and Clyde reached behind her and turned off the stove and the oven, then said to her, Come to the couch. Tell me everything. When Abby finished the sordid tale, Clyde could hardly believe his ears. He wanted to be angry with her. Indeed, he was angry with her. But the violence seemed to affect her deeply, and she told him how stupid she'd been. Being angry wouldn't help anything. Instead, he held her in his arms and rocked her side to side. The thought of her so close to such awful violence made him feel ill. He was the one going off to war, yet she'd faced far worse right here at home. I could have lost you, Abby. You could have been killed.
I know, and I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to put you through this. You're going to war, and I do this to you? I know it's wrong.
So this happened 3 days ago? She nodded and wiped the tears from her cheeks. He pressed, and no police have come calling.
Sal said the police wouldn't be notified since the men are criminals and the gamblers are rich. He said no one wanted trouble, including the police.
Two men are dead. Criminals are not. They were someone's sons, he said more angrily than he meant. Abigail sat up and looked him in the eyes.
I haven't thought about them like that.
Her hand went to her mouth, and more tears streaked down her cheeks.
My God, I'm a monster.
You're not a monster. You're likely still in shock. Those men scared you. They made their choices and died because of them. Better them than you, my darling. He wiped her cheek tenderly. Thank God Sal was there. I don't like the son of a bitch, but who knows what might have happened.
You must think I'm horrible.
He shook his head sadly. No, I don't think that. You made a mistake, and things went crazy. You couldn't have known that would happen. Hell, I love playing poker.
What do we do now?
Clyde stood and paced. He sighed and finally said, I think we have to meet with Sal and possibly your father. I can't have this hanging over your head while I'm back in North Carolina. I'd go crazy with worry.
I don't know if I can face my father again. He was so angry, and he...
Clyde touched her shoulder. He what?
He said awful things about you.
Clyde laughed, and Abby stared up at him. He kneeled in front of her and took both her hands. I've been through the toughest training the U.S. Army offers, Abby. I stuck it out even when I didn't think I could. I've done things I didn't think I could ever possibly do. It's like I went through a cauldron of fire and came out the other side with only the essentials, only the good parts. I don't care what your father thinks of me anymore. I'm better than all those stuffed shirts.
You sound like a warrior.
I am a warrior. That's how we'll face your father, like warriors. A few days later, Clyde went to see his parents. He apologized that Abby wasn't with him, explaining that she felt under the weather and she didn't want to get anyone sick. But the truth was, she was still too shaken up.
They were ecstatic to see him, and they burst with pride as he told them about his training, but he could tell they worried about Frank. They hadn't heard anything except that the troops trapped on the Bataan Peninsula had surrendered while the tiny island fortress of Corregidor continued fighting. They showed him the letter they'd received from the Red Cross. It stated, with regrets, that the Japanese didn't allow them to see or even know who'd been taken prisoner, unless they were officers. Frank, being an NCO, wasn't on any list they'd seen, but they stressed it didn't mean he'd been killed. They simply didn't know. There'd been no news since. Mrs. Cooper put her warm hands on Clyde's and said, "I know your brother's alive, Clyde. I can feel it in my heart." Klondike put his shaggy head on Clyde's leg, and Clyde rubbed him behind the ears. His father, Sidney, put his arms around Cecilia's shoulders and added, "If anyone can survive out there, it's Frank. You know how stubborn he can be." Clyde smiled and looked at the picture of Frank on the bureau. He seemed impossibly young, but even straight out of basic, he had a toughness about him. "You're right. He's tough as nails. Always has been. I hope I'm assigned to the Pacific. I feel I owe it to him." Cecilia reeled back as though a hot ember had burned her. Sidney rubbed her shoulder and said, "Why don't you get us something to drink, dear?" She nodded and shuffled toward the kitchen. They both watched her go. Clyde thought she looked older than he remembered. Sidney said, "Don't mind your mother. She doesn't want to see another one of her boys going off to war. You can understand that. I know it's hard on her. It's hard on everybody, but we all have to make sacrifices. You understand that more than anyone." Sidney nodded, and his eyes lost focus. Clyde knew the look. He'd seen it often enough growing up. His father had been transported back to his time in the Great War for a moment. He'd never talked too much about it, but he'd obviously seen awful things. Sidney finally said, "Duty to country is a powerful draw, son. I remember wanting to get into the fight more than anything else in the world. I thought the war would end long before I ever got there." He shook his head dolefully. He added, "It sounds like you're with a good bunch of guys. That's important." Clyde's eyes lit up. "That's for sure. I feel like we've known each other for years, but it's only been a couple of months. There's no group of men I'd rather jump into battle with." His father cringed a little. "It seems like your attitude's changed along with your body. I know the Army's good at those sorts of things." "You're right. I want to fight. All the training. We're ready. Combat's dangerous enough without adding parachutes. I can't imagine dangling by a string above German trenches. You must be terribly exposed." Clyde thought carefully before answering. He wanted to put his father's mind at ease if he could. He hadn't told anyone about the towers or having to use his reserve chute. That would only make them worry more. He said, "That last jump, we did at night. To make it more interesting, they had us perform an assault on a mock enemy unit after we landed. We jumped from 1,500 feet, landed, formed up, and assaulted the objective before they knew what hit them. It was beautiful. Sure, there'll be casualties. Hell, we lost guys in training. But if they drop us in the right spot, we can take on anyone. Japs, Krauts, or Italians." "Don't mention that to your mother. She's still hoping they'll just use you at carnivals and parades and whatnot." "I know she worries, but I hope and pray they drop us where we can do some good. Not at carnivals." After a light dinner where they carefully avoided talking about the war, Clyde excused himself from the table. "I'm sorry, but I need to get back and check on Abby. I'll be back to see you soon. Don't worry, I'll bring Abby along next time." After hugging his mother, shaking his father's hand, and rubbing behind Klondike's ears one last time, he stepped outside and breathed in his old neighborhood. He didn't like lying about Abby being sick, but it wasn't a complete lie. She still felt the effects and shock of the violence. She didn't feel up to a social visit. She'd woken nearly every night with nightmares. He hadn't breathed a word of it to anyone, particularly his parents.
He'd hoped he'd get things put straight tonight at the Brooks residence. Clyde entered the Brooks estate and felt a flutter in his chest. Despite having jumped out of an airplane in flight 5 times, doing countless miles of arduous runs with full packs and endless push-ups, just to name a few, he still felt nervous confronting his father-in-law, not to mention Sal, who'd recently and ruthlessly killed 2 men with a shotgun at close range. Mr. Haniger, the silver-haired butler, let him in and gave him a wry smile. Clyde smiled back and asked, "How have you been, Mr. Haniger?"
"Very well, thank you. It looks like the army has put some muscle on your bones, if you don't mind me saying so, sir."
Clyde glanced at his arms and said, "Yes, I must say they've turned me into something I never thought I'd be." Haniger raised an eyebrow and asked,
"And what would that be?"
"A warrior." Saying something so brash and immodest went against everything Clyde believed in. But tonight he needed to be strong, and reminding himself of that helped.
"Very good, sir,"
Haniger motioned inside.
"Mr. Brooks and Mr. Sarducci are in the study. They're expecting you."
"Thanks.
I know the way."
Clyde approached the closed study door. He could hear muted conversation inside. He knocked and entered without waiting for an invitation. Sal and Victor both turned and scowled at his rude entry. Each man held a drink, and the golden brown color suffused around the ice cubes. Victor gave him a sideways grin and said,
"Well, the intrepid soldier returns with a flourish."
Clyde said, "Let's cut the bullshit and get down to the brass tacks. I leave in 12 days. I want this whole thing resolved before that. Abby says you have some kind of plan. I'd like to hear it now." Victor's head looked about ready to explode. His face turned a shade of red, and the veins alongside his neck pulsed angrily. Sal turned his prodigious frame squarely at Clyde. His broad shoulders used to intimidate him, but no longer. Sal's eyes, however, turned Clyde's insides to ice. Sal said,
"You're a guest here. Act appropriately, or nothing will get done."
Clyde said, "I want to get this over with as quickly as possible. There's no time for fake pleasantries." Sal looked like he wanted to disagree, but Victor got control of himself and motioned to a chair near the crackling wood in the fireplace.
"Please have a seat, Cooper."
Clyde bristled at the flippant use of his name, but sat down. Sal and Victor sat in the other 2 chairs arranged in a half circle.
"Despite your lack of decorum, you look well," Victor said. "Clearly the army life agrees with you. Perhaps you'll make a career out of it?"
he asked with a sardonic grin.
"I want to know what steps you're taking to keep my Abby safe while I'm away."
Victor waved off Sal's mounting anger and said,
"I thought Abigail wanted to be involved. Where is she?"
"At home. Now answer the question."
"So she doesn't know you're here?"
"No. She thinks I'm still at my parents' house."
"Lying is the first sign of a failing marriage. There has to be trust, young man."
Clyde gripped the arms of the chair tightly. He wanted to attack the cocky son of a bitch. His hand-to-hand skills would make quick work out of him, but he restrained the impulse and seethed.
"I'll ask you again. What steps are you taking?" "I'm glad they've taught you restraint to go along with your new skills."
Victor took a languorous sip from his whiskey. The ice cubes tinkled against the crystal. Clyde understood Victor's intention, and he refused to rise to the bait. He'd wait them out. The fire crackled and popped, and a hot coal leaped out and alighted on the bricks. Finally, Victor said,
"I know Julius Trambolini quite well. Normally, this kind of misunderstanding could be swept under the rug quite easily. I'd planned to bring him to dinner and explain the unique circumstances. He's a businessman, first and foremost. Crooked as a hook, but a businessman nonetheless. Unfortunately, one of the men Sal dispatched is a Trambolini. A nephew, I think."
Sal turned quickly, clearly alarmed. Clyde saw a brief flash of pure hatred cross Sal's face. Sal's voice remained steady and low.
"You didn't tell me that."
Victor waved his hand as though it didn't matter.
I only found out this morning.
Sal looked at the door. We could be in danger right now. They could be stalking us as we speak. It was Victor's turn to look alarmed. He sputtered,
You don't think he'd actually attack us, do you?
Does he know who pulled the trigger? Did you tell him?
Victor's face gave him the answer.
Criminy sakes, Victor. What have you done?
We talked on the telephone. I told him what happened. I was hoping to set up a meeting.
Sal got to his feet and reached into his shoulder holster. He didn't draw the weapon, but asked,
How did he sound? What did he say?
Victor thought about it before answering.
He didn't say anything at first. I thought we'd been disconnected. He finally grumbled something I couldn't make out, then the line went dead.
Did you try calling him again?
No. I thought he sounded strange, so I contacted Charlie, the grocery store owner. I asked him if he had found any ID on them. He still has the bodies in his cold storage. He called me back and told me their last names. One of them was Trambolini.
And you didn't think this would be pertinent information to pass along to me? What the hell's the matter with you, Victor?
Clyde watched the interaction with growing fascination and dread. Over the past few minutes, he'd learned a lot about the relationship between Mr. Sarducci and Mr. Brooks. Before Victor could answer his irate security guard, Clyde asked, Is Abby in danger? He shot to his feet. Does this scumbag know about her involvement? Clyde could read the answer in Victor's suddenly ashen face. He bolted out of the study with Sal close behind him.